Hello and welcome to Talking Work and Health, the podcast series exploring contemporary issues in workplace health with me, Liam Sloan.
And me, Dr. Mark Simpson.
Today, we're discussing how businesses can adapt to new ways of working as a result of the COVID pandemic and how they can do so in a clinically informed way. Back in March, almost every organisation had no choice but to change their operating model almost overnight. Businesses switched to distributed or remote working and implemented COVID-secure workplaces. But now, in this rollercoaster year, new working models are beginning to take shape. Some businesses clearly view this as a long-term approach. Google has announced that employees won't be returning to the office until at least June next year, while other businesses have switched permanently to a digital-only model and are aiming to divest of expensive real estate. So in this new climate, where a blend of physical and online work practices may become the norm, change is inevitable. But the question for many businesses is how to approach this change and how sustainable these changes will be. How, for example, can businesses respond to the new health challenges arising from the COVID crisis? And how clear a picture do businesses have now of their employees' health compared to before the pandemic? And finally, how can you ensure that teams collaborated without resorting to endless back-to-back Zoom or MS Teams calls on a daily basis? Joining me as ever is my co-host, Dr. Mark Simpson. And Mark, I guess when we went into this in March, everyone sort of thought it would be a relatively short-term change, maybe a few months. Do you have any sense now of how long this pandemic is likely to last and will be working in very different ways?
Like most people, when we went into lockdown at the end of March, we thought perhaps a month or two and then we'll all return to the old ways of working. And it was just seen as a stopgap measure to get us through that relatively short period. And here we are, 9 months on, and no sign of any early change. When will we come out of it? I think we have to look at when will we come out of it from a sort of medical or health perspective, and when will we come out of it from an economic perspective? The key change is going to be when there is an effective vaccine, as the virus itself shows no signs of mutating to a less infectious or serious form. And obviously, there are sort of different predictions at this time as to when that vaccine will be available. Even if it was available, though, at the end of December, the challenges of vaccinating millions of people, and it looks as though most people will require 2 doses of the vaccine, perhaps 28 days apart. And this poses a huge logistic challenge. So even if that vaccine were to become available, I think we're not looking until Q3 of next year until we can actually begin some semblance of normality. But clearly, the economic consequences and people regaining confidence to travel and interact is going to take a lot longer to re-establish.
And Mark, on that point, I mean, it feels like everyone is relying on a vaccine as a sort of panacea. Will it just end the pandemic like that? Or is there risks that it will never be quite as effective as we all hope and expect it will be?
Well, I think a combination of all of those, Liam. I think when we've looked at other similar sort of diseases like SARS, the virus was running rife in Southeast Asia, but after 9 months mutated and disappeared. And even if you go back to the Spanish flu, it killed 50 million people in 18 months and then has disappeared and not returned. So we don't know how the new COVID-19 virus is actually going to behave. But I think what we have to do is work on a worst case scenario, that this will become a chronic and endemic disease within society, and we need to look at means of mitigating it.
Thanks, Mark. And today we're really going to focus on the impact on ways of working and workforces of COVID, both from a health point of view and an economic point of view. I'm very pleased to introduce our guest today. Spiro Kamitas is the client director at Gate One, which is a management consultancy specializing in complex business and digital transformations and is supporting a wide range of different businesses in this new COVID world. Welcome to the podcast, Spiro. I'd like to start by just sort of describing what you saw with your clients and how you supported them during the sort of opening months of the pandemic back in March, April.
Yeah, thanks, Liam, and hi, Mark. It's been an absolute whirlwind. I think the thing that we've seen since March is actually things have changed quite dramatically over that period of time. The initial piece was really just a scramble by everyone just to figure out how we can actually keep working, how we can keep businesses going. And a bit like Mark has kind of talked about is none of us thought this was going to last for as long as it has. None of us thought this was for a long term. And it was really a kind of quick response, shield everyone away temporarily, see you all in a few weeks. And it's been nothing like that. And so we've seen the response change from one of just a kind of temporary solution to a real scramble to try and figure out how to operate, how to work, then to thinking about, you know, how do we work in this new environment, then about how we get everyone back into the office. And now it's more about, okay, now how do we make the business more resilient? Because it looks like we're going to be going back to the office and back into lockdowns in these waves.
I mean, do you think there is a sort of normal that we'll ever return to, or will this change now be permanent?
I think we're all kind of hoping that there'll be this kind of return to normal, but I don't think it'll ever happen. I think we have fundamentally changed the mindsets of both businesses and employees that work in the businesses. I mean, we did a fairly informal survey with a number of our clients and a number of the people we're connected with just to find out. And most people really don't want to return to things the way they were. And I think businesses that are going to survive and kind of build out new models and new ways of working are going to have to respect that to some degree. You know, working from home has been pretty challenging for a lot of people, but it's also produced some interesting results for them. They found that there are patches when they're much more productive. They can have better connection with family at home. I don't think anyone's saying they expect to, you know, be working constantly from home all the time, but at least, you know, generally the feeling is probably around a couple of days a week at home, which means as businesses, we need to figure out how we can actually work in that environment and the impact that it has on productivity and how we can be more productive as a consequence of it.
In my introduction, I sort of mentioned this concept of distributed working. Can you just sort of explain for our listeners what we mean by that and how it's manifesting itself in different organizations at the moment?
So the reason we're using the word distributed working is initially it was all about remote working and virtual working. And that was the case because as everybody got locked away. But what we're realizing is we're finding now that what's happening is the company is being spread out across multiple locations, whether that's offices, homes, you know, small bubbles, or however that seems to work. And so it's now more a blend of virtual working and physical working in this kind of hybrid environment. And that's not just happening in our own organizations. That's also happening with our customers' organizations or with partners that we're actually working with. So we're seeing a spread of the whole ecosystem into multi-locations, which is why we're calling it distributed working rather than just remote working.
With the clients that you're working with, and understand that's across sort of many different sectors, have they settled into a new routine which is now fairly static, or are some of them sort of really thinking about what a long-term change to their operating model, to their ways of working might be?
I think it differs and it varies. And as you'd expect, it varies to a degree by the industry and the type of work that it actually entails. So for everyone, I think knowledge workers are the ones that have found it easier to move into this environment. So you talked about Google not coming back until 2021. And actually, it's much easier for organizations that rely purely on knowledge work to deliver their outcomes, or where there's a high component of knowledge work. For companies that need a kind of physical presence, you know, whether that's manufacturing or retail or some of your process industries or pharma that requires labs, for example, or some of our essential services that are managing our electricity grids, that's a much more difficult thing to do. And that's kind of a mix of making the physical environment safe and working with those parts of the company that kind of work in a more knowledge work way. Work together. I think what's interesting is almost all of them, regardless of what type of industry they're in, is thinking about what the future actually looks like and what that needs to be. And they could be doing it from a perspective of this presents a whole lot of opportunities, or they could be doing it as some are from a perspective of actually what this situation has shown is it's shown a number of flaws and deficiencies in the way we operate. And they're rethinking what that actually means. I think all companies are going through a series of phases, which is kind of how do we get ourselves back to work safely? How do we build ourselves as a resilient organization? Then it's kind of thinking how we can get performance, because almost all companies have suffered some kind of performance levels, how they can get performance levels back. with an eye to kind of thinking about how they transform in the future.
And let's just take those sort of positives and negatives in turn. I mean, what sort of opportunities for improvement have you seen, have your clients seen, that sort of been offered by these new working models?
So there are several, and some are near term. Some are obviously going to take a much longer and more thoughtful way of taking advantage of them. One thing that it has shown us is actually we can get quite a lot done working from home or working from not in the office, as it were. And I think sometimes the conversation can turn quite quickly into one of real estate and property and the like. And actually, if we turn the conversation towards business performance, I think the opportunities start to become quite interesting. So the obvious one is around productivity. And there are some kind of interesting conflicting views on this, because some studies have kind of shown recently that actually productivity has declined or not changed at all, or for the most part is slightly down. I think it kind of depends on how we're looking at the problem. I think there are some really interesting ways of looking at productivity. And at the moment, we tend to think of ourselves as in one space or another, but there are huge advantages to being part in the office and part at home. And so, you know, not necessarily a time for now, but as we kind of do some days at home and some days in the office, what we can do is have the private time when we're at home working in a, you know, in a very kind of quiet thinking type space, and then doing more collaborative work when we're back in the office. There was quite an interesting study, and this was done ages ago, and it was more about building design, but it's very applicable. There's a building in MIT, which that building alone produces almost double the number of research papers of any other. And they had a look at why it was. And the reason is it was set up in a hub and spoke model. So what you had is private offices where people could go away and think. But in order to get anywhere, they had to move through public environments, which forced them to kind of have some of these collaborative conversations, or even just serendipitous conversations where they bumped into someone and could share something. So really interesting how I think there are huge opportunities for productivity, but it comes from redesigning how we work. We can't just expect that it's going to happen.
And Mark, I'm interested in your perspective on this too. Have you seen from your clients any sort of improvements in health and productivity that have come about from this almost enforced decamping to home-based working?
Well, I think what you ought to do, Liam, is perhaps split health and productivity, because if you look at actually the health impacts on productivity, this is not a new phenomenon. If you go back, in fact, as far as 1916 with the health and productivity reports on munition workers, and then following on from that in 1927, the work done at the Hawthorne plant in Illinois by Professor Elton Mayo. So it's not a new concept, and there's been a huge amount of work, particularly in the last 10 years, that have done actually on quantifying the health impacts on productivity, and particularly the health impacts of chronic diseases such as diabetes, but more importantly, mental health conditions on productivity. And obviously this has led to the terms around presenteeism. So I think what I've seen in our clinical practice is winners and losers from this. So the people working in cramped, suboptimal conditions have had their health impacted and thereby their productivity. Other people, though, perhaps as Sparrow says, more based in the knowledge type roles, have actually been enabled by this. They don't have to commute, obviously. They're able to spend more time with families. So I think it's difficult to draw a broad brush, but I think definitely people in the knowledge industries have actually prospered here. But I've also actually seen great team spirit in terms of how our clients in the essential industries have actually found almost something akin to a war spirit in terms of how they adapted so quickly in the early stages. And without them, we wouldn't have had waste collection, we wouldn't have had logistics, we wouldn't have had power distribution. So I've seen a real esprit de corps happening in some industries, and I'm sure that's benefited their own sense of well-being as well.
Spiro, let's turn now to what some of the downsides of distributed working may be. And I suppose the one which I fear some of our listeners will be all too familiar with is the sort of the Zoom gloom of these endless video calls that go on through the day. Any recommendations or thoughts on how to avoid some of that almost fatigue that comes from sort of enforced home working, but still having to communicate through video channels?
Yeah, so Zoom gloom, I like that term, it's a very real thing. And I think the problem for it comes about because what we've done is we've moved offline online. And the trick is not to try and replicate what we used to do, but now do it in a virtual way or in a remote way. We have to figure out and work out how to use it better. So we talk a lot about Zoom fatigue, but it's really because what we're trying to do is do what we used to do before. So the companies that are being quite successful with this are the first thing that they're doing is they're not just using video chat. They're kind of using video chat and Zoom in concert with some other technologies that make it all kind of a better way of working. But probably where we've seen them be successful with some of this is really that they're going through a stage of experiments and working out what works for them. There isn't really a recipe that works that you can kind of go, okay, well, if we did it like this, it would all be fine. Even a simple thing on figuring out how that video chat works best for you. For some teams, being polite, raising hands, waiting their turn, being patient works best. For others, having the chaos of microphones on all the time and hearing the noise rather than the kind of floating tumbleweed sounds that you sometimes get on a Zoom call works for them. It's more about figuring out the mindset that works for them. And then it's about experimenting with different ways of collaborating. So there's lots of new technology around collaborative spaces where you can kind of work together, or even virtual casual spaces where you can meet in a not Zoom call. The most important thing, I think, is not to muddle through, is not to kind of go, oh, it's all, as Mark was saying, is we don't really know how long this is going to last. So it's not a case of saying we'll muddle through and survive this and everything will go back to normal. It's actually figuring out how to kind of make the best of it.
And have you got any examples, Spiro, of companies that you feel have done this really well?
There are so many. It's more about how they've actually done it. They've fundamentally challenged what it is they do. So one is making sure the communication is absolutely effective. So we have this assumption, for example, that everything is built around the physical. The fact that we meet how we do tends to be because we require people to be physically located to do so. So for example, we ran a series of workshops with one of our clients with senior leaders pretty much all around the world. So 20 people getting together 4 weeks in a row. And the way we were able to do it is get them together for 30 minutes 4 weeks in a row. That would never have happened before. It would have been if you're getting people to travel, we would have kind of put a big workshop around it. It would have taken forever to organize. It would have had to work in concert with their schedules, making kind of much smaller meetings that kind of worked, which only required 30 minutes out of their days, was actually quite easy to organize and quite easy to do. And then there are other things like, for example, doing, if you do team check-ins, you can do team check-ins now in 10 or 15 minutes. It's useful to do them clustered together rather than spreading them out. So if you meet with your team monthly, try and meet with them almost on a day and start to get the pulse of the organization. So there are lots of different ways. And we're not even delving into the realms of rethinking how the whole company works. This is just on the small bits of how we interact with each other.
And one of the key aspects which has been sort of reported all around this transition to home-based working is just that it has affected different workers in very different ways. And I guess without that sort of in-person connection, it's much more difficult perhaps for managers and colleagues to just check in on the well-being of their colleagues and their direct reports. Any sort of tips on that, Spiro, in terms of how do you continue building a healthy culture and social interaction when everyone's so far apart?
It's something we're all figuring out. It'd be interesting to get Mark's perspective on this, because longer term remote working, I think, can have a big impact on health. And we're not just talking about the physical and the ergonomics of it, but the mental side of it too. One of the things that's really, really interesting about this at the moment is the concept of virtual inclusion, where we're starting to get into these hybrid environments where you have people coming in remotely or dialing in. You're starting to get the potential for a virtual crowd and the in-office crowd.
Yeah.
And actually how we're kind of including people in that is paramount. So there is that concept. Then there is the how you kind of have these touches and check-in. So you have to kind of build a whole new set of structures. We're all still figuring this out, quite frankly, and it's not that easy to do. In fact, It's the micro interactions that we miss more than anything else. And that's to where you tend to spot some of these things materializing.
I think from my perspective as well, Spiro, historically, we've perhaps operated on the concept of no news is good news in terms of people's health. And I think now there's a great emphasis that you actually have to actively ask the question about how are you, rather than actually assuming that if somebody hasn't actually put up their hand, then they've got nothing to say. I think the other thing is that Zoom or its alternatives are here to stay with us for quite some time. And it certainly does call for a whole new set of meeting chairing skills to actually make sure that you're much more inclusive and actually you seek out other people's opinions rather than, again, assuming that somebody, if their screen is blank, that they've actually withdrawn from it. So I think, yes, there's going to be a whole new set of behaviours we're going to need to learn.
And Mark, what sort of practical steps should businesses be taking to minimise the health impacts of these types of new ways of working?
Well, again, as we went into panic mode in March and just managed to ship everything back and more or less get connectivity if it was available, we're now in a place where we really need to actually make sure that we've optimised people's home DSE arrangements so that we've optimised their ergonomic environment. We also need to look at actually perhaps rented or shared office spaces for those people whose home situation really is untenable as a working environment in the medium to long term. And I've even seen, obviously, some hotel chains have been quite innovative in offering day rates for office workers to go and actually use their space, their lobby, and their Wi-Fi. The other thing, clearly, is actually just improving, as far as you can, that office interactivity. So putting in sort of instant messaging services that people can access, WhatsApp groups, will help to replace some of that just spontaneous interactivity that we all used to enjoy when we were in the office.
Just on that productivity question again, Mark, any sense at all from clients as to whether they're welcoming this sort of distributed working or actually it's a desperation to get back to normal?
Again, I think a combination. We've certainly seen some of our city clients who have actually found that the transition has worked very well. Productivity has actually held up. But then certainly we've seen in other conditions, if you look at the NHS Track and Trace and how that was launched on a home-based service with people actually dialing into a virtual call centre, that really hasn't worked at all well. Productivity has been very low. And again, because as we move into recruiting a disengaged workforce, so we've had a workforce that's been engaged and has now gone to distributed working, the challenge will be is when you're hiring people into these new workplaces where you're unable to actually establish those sort of physical and social connections.
Spiro, it's obviously a moving picture and it's, you know, everything is still very much in flux. What are you going to be monitoring and looking at over the next maybe 6 months in terms of new trends emerging, in terms of ways of working? What are you interested by, I guess?
What we're probably most interested in is probably three phases of how we do this. One is, how do we resume some level of normality? And that's not necessarily about getting back to the office, but it's about getting a baseline that actually works for a level of business performance that we're happy with. What's interesting is most businesses thought we were kind of on track for that. And then a second lockdown kind of sets you back. So the big issue now is how do we build a way of working that's actually resilient, that allows us to move back to the office or back to the office in a sort of halfway house and then back into lockdowns. Then it's about how we rebuild business performance in the short term, which is kind of getting ourselves back onto a performance track. The key thing there is really around clarity of ways of working. More than anything else, it's about making sure everybody's absolutely 100% clear on what their role is, what they need to do. So where Mark talks about some of those call centers failing, actually that's because of not being 100% clear. And 100% clear requires incredibly effective communication. So it's not just about getting our ways of working, the operating model, the processes right. It's about getting that communication really effective. And then longer term, obviously, is as we start to come out of this, we start to take advantages of some of these shifts and companies are thinking about what are the things they can do in terms of the transformations they were thinking about. So one of the things that's really interesting around all of this is almost every company's digital transformation has been accelerated by virtue of necessity, and they've realized that they can go faster in some cases. And so I've tended to kind of accelerate some of their timescales on that.
Final question for you, Mark. Do you anticipate or fear a sort of wave of health conditions arising because of people working from home in an unusual environment over the course of the year?
I think what's even more important than that, Liam, is the wave of missed cancer diagnoses, the number of people who won't be able to access treatment for cardiac conditions. So I think it's the fact that the NHS has unfortunately had to be subverted to its focus actually being on treating COVID patients, but also creating COVID-safe environments. So the concern is not so much actually health conditions that are actually going to be generated by home working, which hopefully are relatively sort of transient rather than long-term in nature, but it's going to be the number of people who haven't been able to access life-saving critical care.
Spiro, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a really interesting discussion as always, and I think there will be a lot more change in this space over the coming year. I think we all guess we're going to be living in a very different world at the back end of 2021 as we are in 2020. Thank you both.
Thanks, Liam.
Talking Work and Health is brought to you by Health Management, a Maximus company. Please visit our site to find more about occupational health at healthmanagement.co.uk. Please remember to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your podcasts for more interesting episodes.